Welcome to SNC's podcast series, SNC Critical Insights. I'm Bill Monahan, head of SNC's Products Liability and Mass Torts Group and a partner in the firm's litigation group. Joining me today is Shane Palmer, an associate in the firm's litigation group. Today, we're going to talk about the new Rule 16.1 of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, which the advisory committee recently voted to adopt as the very first rule governing multi-district or MDL litigation. We'll be discussing the original proposal for Rule 16.1 that was published last year. Then we'll talk about the defense and plaintiffs bar's reaction to the proposed rule. And then the final rule that was adopted in April last month and its implications for MDLs going forward. To provide some context for our discussion, Shane, would you start us off by describing the existing guidance that's currently out there for conducting pretrial proceedings in an MDL?
The short answer is that there is no official guidance. Since Congress passed the Multi-District Litigation Act in 1968 and created the MDL process, there haven't been any specific rules dictating how judges should manage MDLs beyond the federal rules of civil procedure that apply in every federal civil case. So in the absence of official guidance for MDLs, courts and parties have turned to sources such as the Manual for Complex Litigation, which includes recommendations for how to structure and manage large, complex cases involving many parties. Relying on the Manual for Complex Litigation and other sources of unofficial guidance, for years, MDL courts have adopted a range of procedural devices designed to create efficiencies and to reduce the costs and complexities of MDL proceedings. These include the use of master consolidated pleadings, along with plaintiff fact sheets to plead facts relating to specific parties, processes for appointing plaintiff steering committees to act on behalf of other counsel and parties for purposes of coordinated discovery and pretrial motions, and processes for selecting specific cases to serve as bellwether trials to resolve key factual disputes that, in theory, can inform global settlement negotiations.
In recent years, the number of cases that are transferred to MDLs has ballooned. 5 years ago, about half of all pending federal civil cases were part of an MDL. And today, 5 years later, that figure is closer to 70%, which is really a remarkable statistic. The proliferation of MDL cases combined with, until now, lack of any specific rules for how MDL should be managed has raised a number of concerns for both judges and parties and their lawyers. One, because there are no mandatory rules governing MDL proceedings and judges are given significant discretion in managing pretrial proceedings, there is significant uncertainty about how any given MDL proceeding will be carried out, especially in the early stages of litigation before a pretrial schedule has been set or a case management order has been issued. Another significant issue is that where there are a very large number of individual cases consolidated in an MDL, often with little screening at the front end, there is an increased potential for meritless cases to fly under the radar when the MDL lacks a procedure for the early vetting of individual claims. The practical reality is that the large number of cases being filed creates a significant risk of driving settlement numbers up, of compensating meritless cases, and also running the risk of impeding settlements and settlement negotiations given the perceived value of cases that in reality are not cases that should be paid or should be part of any settlement. In response to these and other concerns, in 2017, the advisory committee established an MDL subcommittee to consider whether new rules should be added to the federal rules of civil procedure to address these and other unique challenges of MDLs. The new Rule 16.1, which Shane is going to talk about now, is the first proposed rule to come out of that subcommittee's efforts.
So in June 2023, the Judicial Conference Committee on Rules of Practice and Procedure published proposed amendments to the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, which included the addition of this new rule 16.1. The new rule focused on the early stages of MDLs and introduced four provisions intended to provide a framework for the initial management of MDL proceedings. So first, the proposed rule recommended that the MDL court schedule an initial management conference very early in proceedings. The proposed rule states that the conference is intended to, quote, develop a management plan for orderly pretrial activity in the MDL proceedings, unquote. This generally happens already, and so this rule would really just be formalizing an existing practice. Second, the MDL court was given discretion to designate so-called coordinating counsel to assist the court with the initial management conference and to work with plaintiffs or with defendants to prepare for the conference. We'll talk more about this provision in a bit. Third, the proposed rule suggested that the MDL court order the parties to meet and confer in advance of this initial management conference and submit a joint report covering a variety of recommended topics. Those topics included some of the same items that are addressed in a joint Rule 26F report that the parties would submit before an initial Rule 16 scheduling conference in a typical civil litigation. Those topics include, for example, a proposal for a discovery plan and the potential for early settlement discussions. But the topics for this MDL initial management conference also included several items that are peculiar to MDLs, including, among other things, one, whether plaintiff's leadership counsel should be appointed, the procedure for their appointment, their role in pretrial and settlement activities, and the means for their compensation. Two, discussion of how and when the parties will exchange information about the factual bases for their claims and defenses. And three, whether consolidated pleadings should be prepared and how to handle the filing of new actions in the MDL. There's other things enumerated in the proposed rule, but those are just some examples. And then finally, the proposed rule recommended that MDL courts enter an initial MDL management order following this conference, addressing the matters discussed in the party's report and any other matters in the court's discretion. Again, this generally happens already, so this would just be formalizing existing practice. One thing to note, the proposed rule was entirely advisory in nature. So rather than imposing mandatory requirements on courts and the parties, the rule used permissive language, instructing that courts should or may take certain steps to guide the MDL at the outset of the litigation.
In terms of reactions to the proposal, many lawyers in the defense bar were supportive, including, in particular, the recommendation that MDL courts consider how and when to exchange information about the factual support for plaintiffs' claims. It is a reality of many MDLs that meritless cases get filed and effectively parked in MDLs for years without any meaningful screening or assessment. And some on the defense side reacted to the rule by arguing that it should include even more stringent requirements for earlier screening of individual plaintiffs' claims to combat the proliferation of meritless cases. On the other side, the plaintiffs' bar was generally critical of the proposed rule. In particular, many plaintiffs' attorneys and advocacy groups reacted negatively to the inclusion of the coordinating counsel role, arguing that this might give a very small number of lawyers too much control over key decisions before leadership appointments were made by the court. Similarly, some plaintiffs' counsel complained that the coordinating counsel role could erode non-lead plaintiffs' autonomy over their individual clients' claims. And still, other plaintiffs' counsel complained that a blanket rule applicable to all MDLs, regardless of their size and complexity, was inappropriate and would limit MDL judges' flexibility.
So let me now talk about the final rule that was ultimately adopted. Last month in April, the advisory committee voted to adopt a final version of Rule 16.1 that removed the provision giving the court leeway to designate coordinating counsel to assist the court and the parties in preparing for the initial MDL management conference. but it left most of the rest of the proposed rule intact. Even without that coordinating council role, however, once the rule goes into effect, the parties in an MDL will still need to coordinate in advance of the initial management conference to meet and confer about the topics that Rule 16.1 recommends should be covered in that conference. So, practically speaking, the plaintiffs in an MDL are ultimately going to need to act through some sort of representative committee in carrying out that coordination at the front end. And in any event, because the final rule doesn't prohibit the use of a coordinating council for the initial scheduling conference, MDL courts can still decide to use coordinating council in specific cases at their discretion. The advisory committee also declined to adopt comments calling for stronger language on a mandatory basis that would require MDL plaintiffs to provide earlier substantiation of individual plaintiffs' claims. But Rule 16.1 does retain the suggestion that the court should order the parties to address in their initial report how and when they will exchange information about the factual bases for their claims and defenses. And it recommends that the MDL court's initial management order address this issue as well. As such, defense counsel will soon have a procedural hook to request more stringent procedures for inquiring into individual plaintiffs' claims and the bases for them at the outset of litigation.
Thanks, Shane. That last point has important implications for defendants' ability to deal with baseless claims earlier in MDL proceedings before there's been any meaningful settlement negotiations. Currently, delay is not uncommon in the ability to assess the merits of individual plaintiffs' claimed injuries, sometimes not until around the time of the bellwether process. And often that's too late to have any real value in terms of vetting cases for global settlement discussions and other reasons. But now that the proposed rule explicitly endorses the earlier exchange of information about the party's claims, there are a couple of strategies that might be helpful to weeding out baseless claims early on. First, for MDL cases that have been filed, defense counsel may want to push in the initial case management conference for the court to allow early briefing of some threshold, relatively straightforward issues around individual plaintiffs and their injuries. I think while more complicated issues around, say, causation that would require expert testimony are more typically appropriate and going to be saved for later in the proceedings, there could be early on some discrete, relatively simple issues that defense counsel can target based on relatively limited disclosures from plaintiffs. For instance, where the plaintiff didn't use the product at issue, or where records show that the plaintiff experienced the injury before having used or meaningfully used the product that allegedly caused the problem. One additional opportunity to press for earlier discovery is where the parties negotiate the tolling of statutes of limitations for individual cases that have not yet been filed. Typically, this is sometimes called the census registry. As part of that tolling process, parties sometimes agree to put in place a registry for plaintiffs or potential plaintiffs to identify themselves and the nature of their injuries in order to obtain the benefit of tolling. At this stage, defense counsel can press for more information and documentation, perhaps with the benefit of the new proposed rule here, maybe even some medical records to substantiate the injuries that are being put on the census registry in order to be eligible for tolling. Plaintiff's counsel will, of course, remain subject to the requirements of Rule 11 and comparable rules under state law to conduct a reasonable inquiry into the facts alleged in a complaint and to represent that those factual contentions have or are likely to have evidentiary support. And if plaintiff's counsel fails to put in that work to investigate the merits of their claims at the outset, they're going to be risking Rule 11 sanctions. That's another tool, in addition to the ones I just mentioned, available to defendants for trying to deter unmeritorious claims.
So the final rule will now go to the Judicial Conference of the United States for approval, and then on to the Supreme Court. Finally, the rule would need to be reviewed and approved by Congress. With the time it'll take to go through that final review process, the rule won't come into effect until sometime in 2025 or later. But between now and then, MDL courts will almost certainly be looking to the proposed rule for guidance.
Thanks for joining me, Shane, and thank you all for listening to S&C Critical Insights. We hope it was interesting. For more information about our practice, please visit us at www.sulcrom.com.